Zem, zest, zip, zap, and zing. Number 10. An Osho talk, given spontaneously at an outdoor meeting to an international audience of thousands of people.
The first question. Can you throw some light on the feeling of nostalgia? Freud called it regressive and a seeking of the womb. This does not satisfy me. Sometimes the perfume of a flower, sounds, a place or an incident from childhood can evoke a few seconds of feeling and a yearning that are so sad and so sweet, it can choke me with its intensity. My childhood was not so happy, nor is the womb so appealing, that mere sentimentality for the old days can explain it. Could you help with some indications? The whole of humanity suffers from nostalgia. Yes, I call it a suffering. It is a disease. It happens only because we are not able to live in the present totally, passionately, intensely. Then the mind starts substituting the present, and then there are two possibilities. Either you move towards the past or you move towards the future. Neither the past exists nor the future. The past is no more, the future not yet. All that exists is this moment. Only this moment. Now is the only real time, and here the only real space. But whenever you become obsessed with the past or the future, it simply shows one thing: an escape from the present, an escape from the existential. And why one should want to escape from the existential? Why one should want to escape into the memories or into fantasies? There can be only one reason. You don't know how to live now. You don't know the art of getting in tune with reality. Because your present is so empty, so meaningless, you have to compensate it with something. The easier way to compensate it is with past, because past once has been. It has left its footprints in the sands of your memory. It is easier to fall back. The past seems more substantial than the future. Hence, 99% people fall towards the past. only 1%, the poets, the visionaries, the artists, they look towards the future. They compensate their present with the future. But basically both are doing the same. More or less, everybody is doing it in his own way. Nostalgia means non-meditativeness, unawareness, unconsciousness, and an utter futile exercise, absolutely futile exercise. You cannot be nourished by the past. There is no way to live it again. But you can live in the memories. Living in the memories is an empty gesture. So the first thing is to remember that it is not only you who is suffering from nostalgia. Everybody. Relatively, there may be differences. And the people who live in the future are also projecting the past, because from where they can get material to make future dreams, they will get from the memories. They will modify their past, decorate their past, make new combinations of the past, and create a future heaven. And this is true about individuals and about societies too. The old societies, for example India, lives in the past. Its golden age has passed. In the future there is only darkness and nothing else. The future holds no hope. So India falls back towards the past. It happens to every individual in his old age. It is an indication of old age. Because the old man cannot look ahead. There is nothing but death. If he looks in the future, he can hear the footsteps of death coming closer and closer and closer. It is frightening. He closes that door completely. He looks back. It is more beautiful. All those memories of youth and childhood. The child lives in the future because he has no past. He is always hoping to become young as soon as possible, as quickly as possible. The same is true about young societies. For example, America. Its whole history is only of 300 years. India at least has lived 10,000 years. More is possible, but not less. 10,000 years certainly create a deep hankering for the past. The society is so old, so collapsing. But America can hope for the future. It is so young. It has no past. If the American tries to go to the past, where he can go? Abraham Lincoln, Washington, and comes the end. There is not much in it. 300 years are nothing. India can go on and on back, as far as one can conceive. So it is true about the individuals, it is true about the societies, races, collectivities, that if you are very young, you look towards the future. If you are getting old, you start looking towards the past. So one thing, you must be getting old. If not physically, then psychologically. But deep down, you know that the peak of life has passed and the future looks dark and dismal. But I don't make much difference between future and past, because both are escapes. The king had a very small reproductive machinery. One day while bathing with other nobles, a friend remarked, "My dear king, you have a really small thing there." And the king replied, "Yes, if it was another inch smaller, I would be a queen." Relatively speaking, this is the whole theory of Albert Einstein, the theory of relativity. So, Ronald, you may be too much obsessed with the nostalgia. Others may be a little less obsessed or more, but it is only a question of quantity. Only an enlightened person has no nostalgia. Because he need not escape from the present. The awakened lives here now. He knows no other life. The first thing about nostalgia, it can be understood only if you understand the nature of the mind. The mind functions like a pendulum of an old clock. It moves from one extreme to another. It never stays in the middle. If the pendulum stays in the middle, the clock stops. That's exactly true about mind. If it remains in the middle, the mind stops. And that is the beginning of meditation. To be in the present is the beginning of an immense journey into eternity. Eternity is vertical, time is horizontal. In time you move from A to B, from B to C, from C to D. It is linear, a line, a horizontal line. The moment you stop in the middle, you don't move from A to B. Your whole dimension changes. It becomes vertical. you dive deep into A. From A1 to A2, from A2 to A3, from A3 to A4, and you go on diving deeper and deeper into A. Not to be, not to see. The horizontal is no more there. It is vertical. And the heights of life and the depths of life belong to the vertical dimension. The horizontal means the shallow, the superficial. Mind is equivalent to time. Hence, it is not only a metaphor when I am using the clock and the pendulum as symbols for the mind. It is literally true. The moment you are out of the mind, that is, you are moving in the vertical dimension, you are also out of time. A Sufi saying attributed to Jesus is, a disciple asks Jesus, "What will be very special in your kingdom of God?" He said, "There shall be time no longer." The disciple may not have ever thought that this is going to be the answer. There shall be time no longer. It is not reported in the New Testament. New Testament has missed many important things about Jesus. But other secret traditions have carried those messages. There shall be time no longer. He defines his kingdom of God by that statement. That will be the most special thing about it. No time. Timelessness. Mind is time. The moment there is no mind, there is no time. And when there is no time, there is no past, no future. Remember, time consists only of past and future. Nostalgia for the past and dreams for the future. The present is not part of time at all. So when you hold the pendulum of the clock in the middle, the clock stops. And when you hold your attention, your awareness exactly in the middle, in the present, mind disappears, time disappears. If you don't know the art of meditation, then the pendulum goes on moving from one extreme to another, from the past to the future, from the future back to the past. That's how it keeps itself going. That's how it keeps its momentum. A beggar knocks at the gate of a Bavarian convent and ask the sister on duty, "Please, do you have any old robes for me?" A bit ruffled, the sister replies, "But this is a nunnery. We don't have men in this house, and no men's clothing, of course." The beggar apologizes and leaves. The mother superior, who has overheard the conversation, says, "You should not have told him that we are without any male protection. Now that he knows, he might come one night and molest us." After a brief moment of thought, the sister on duty opens her little window and shouts after the beggar, "Hey, you, listen. At night, the house is full of men." That's the way of the mind. From one extreme to another. it never stops in the middle. It is extremist, either rightist or leftist. But it knows nothing of the golden mean. You ask me, Freud called it regressive and seeking of the womb. This does not satisfy me. You have not understood poor Sigmund Freud. He is one of the most misunderstood men of this century. He had many insights of tremendous value. And they gain more value because he is not an awakened man. He is a blind man groping for the door, and many times he has come very close to the door. But obviously, not being enlightened himself, whatsoever he says about the door, his experience of closing to it has not that clarity which only a Buddha or a Lao Tzu or a Jesus can have. He uses words which can be very easily misunderstood. His words are ordinary, his insights very extraordinary. It is almost a miracle that a man who knows nothing of meditation, who knows nothing of his own consciousness, has come so close many times to the truth. One step more and he may have stepped out of darkness, out of blindness. For example, Sigmund Freud calls it regressive. It is true. But the word regressive hurts. Nostalgia is regressive. Of course, it does not satisfy, because it does not give you any nourishment for the ego. Regressive? And you have always thought it is some great poetic quality, that you have great understanding of the past, that your memory is magical, that you can recreate the past, you can relive it as if it is again there. You may have thought it something of very great creative value, and Sigmund Freud comes and he calls it regressive. It is certainly regressive. You think of yesterday's only, because you are not a grown-up yet. You are still somewhere living farther back. The average psychological age of human beings is 12 years. And that is average, Ronald. One may be 10, 8, 7, 6, 4. Because there are people who are 16, 20, 25. So don't take the average for granted. Just look into your nostalgia, where you are lingering in the past. There must be few special spots, few special memories which come again and again. That's an indication that something has remained there. Something has not grown since then. A part of you is still 6 years of age, if that is the time which gives you sad and sweet memories. If you remember of some other time, then another part is clinging there. Man is spread almost all over the way. There is a story in India. Shiva's wife died, and he loved the woman so much, so madly, that he, in his madness, thought that there must be a physician somewhere in the country who can still revive her back to life. So he carried his wife Parvati's dead body on his shoulders and roamed around the country for some miracle worker, some physician who knows the secret of nectar, who can revive the woman back. Of course, the body started deteriorating. It became rotten. Parts of the body started falling. But he was so mad, he went on and on. Hands fell in one place, legs fell in another, the head fell somewhere else. That's how the Indian sacred places are born. This is the story. One part fell in Varanasi, another fell in Puri, another fell in Ujjain, and so on and so forth. In 12 parts, the body fell all over the country. By the time his tour was over, nothing was left. The woman had disappeared. But wherever one part of the woman fell, one sacred spot arose. It became a tirtha, a place for pilgrimage. This is somehow very significant about each of you. A part of you fell when you were 4 years of age, and that part has remained there. Another part fell somewhere else. You are spread all over the way. You are not one piece. You are a multiplicity, multi-psychic, many minds. And one part of you may be very grown up, and another may be very childish. A scientist may be a very grown up man as far as his science is concerned. When he goes into his lab, he is a very skillful, intelligent person, works with great acumen, talent, genius. But another part of his life may be very childish, almost stupid. When he is out of his lab, he is a totally different person. It is said about Karl Marx that one day he brought many boxes of cigarettes to his home. The wife was a little puzzled. Women are more together than men. They are more earthbound, more earthly, and live more closer to the present. The wife asks, "What made you bring so many cigarettes? And we are out of money." He said, "Don't be worried at all. I have found a secret way of earning money. That's why I have purchased so many cigarettes. I will tell you the secret. Just coming back home on the way, I thought about an economic law that if you smoke 12 cigarettes per day and you can find cheaper cigarettes, then with each cigarette you will be saving money. So the more you smoke, the more money is saved. So now there is no need to worry about money. I will simply smoke and money will be saved. And I have found the cheapest brand. So much money will be saved that now you need not worry." The woman thought he has gone mad. He closed his doors and started smoking. Two cigarettes together, because he was in such a hurry to earn money. And the woman rushed to one of his friends, Frederick Engels, and told him the whole thing, that he has gone mad and he is continuously smoking in two cigarettes together because he thinks quicker the better. Engels came, tried to convince him, but he argued. It was very difficult to bring him down to the earth. And this happens to many people. In one part, they may be grown-ups. In another part, very childish. Nostalgia is regressive. You may not like the word, but the truth is there. Sigmund Freud is very close to the right point. And he is also right about the womb. Again, he is using a word which seems offensive. Who wants the womb? Who wants to go back into the womb? The very idea is sickening. What you can get in the womb of a mother? Just the very idea will make you vomit. Just the other day, Ajit Saraswati sterilized my tailor, Veena. And my librarian, Gayan, had gone to see the operation. Before Ajit started the operation, Gayan fainted. The very idea of looking into the womb was enough. And if this is so about a woman, what about a man? Just think, looking back into the womb, if there is a window and you look inside, would you like to go there? You will escape as far away from any womb as possible. Because few wombs are very dangerous. They can suck you in. I have heard a man was lying on the street, dead and naked. A rabbi was passing by. Seeing the naked man, he removed his hat and covered the man, particularly his private parts. Then a drunkard came by. He looked at the naked man and he was completely drunk. So he thought, this is a woman. And he asked the rabbi, what you are going to do? The rabbi said, I am going to contact the hospital people. But the drunkard said, first we should take this guy out. Just the head is showing, the whole guy is gone. By the time you bring the hospital people, the guy may have disappeared. First, let us take this guy out and then you can go anywhere you want. I am concerned about this poor man. Who wants to go into the womb? So it offended you. But what he means really is that those 9 months in the mother's womb, of course, you are not conscious about them anymore. You were not conscious even when you were in the womb, were the most pleasant time. Unless you can find a more blissful space, the desire to go into the womb back remains. It is an unconscious longing. Those 9 months were of tremendous silence, rest, warmth. There was no worry, no problem. You were fed, you were taken care of, and everything was absolutely automatic. You were surrounded by warm waters. And the womb was keeping you in a very cozy space, protected, safe, secure. Those 9 months are still there in your unconscious. Hence, there is a desire to go back to the womb. That is part of nostalgia. In fact, that is part of what you call love. The man trying to penetrate the woman is nothing but a search for the womb. Very much changed, but deep down is still the same search. Every man is looking for the mother. And unless your woman fulfills the role of your mother, you will not be happy with her. Now you are asking something impossible. Hence, so much unhappiness in the world. You are asking your woman to be your mother and yet be your woman. Young, very alive, beautiful, and yet at the same time motherly. Now she cannot do both the things. If she has to be very beautiful according to your criterion of beauty. If she has to be very young, then she cannot be your mother. If she tries to be your mother, then she will not be any longer beautiful. Then she will not be a Sophia Loren. Then she will be like Maya Susila. She is a perfect mother. You can find the mother, but if you are asking for Sophia Loren in Susila, then there is going to be trouble. What she can do? She cannot do both the things. And Sophia Loren will look good in the films, but she cannot be a mother to you. She cannot give you that warmth. She does not have that much fat. From where to give you warmth? She is bony. Don't ask a woman to be both a model and a mother. But that's what everybody is asking. And every woman is asking the same from the man, to be a dad and to be a lover. No man can fulfill both the roles together. It is almost impossible. Hence, you will be frustrated this way or that. Frustration is bound to be there. The search is for the womb. You may not like the word womb, but that is your misunderstanding. Nothing is wrong with Freud using the word, but you have misunderstood it. Punya has sent me a joke. She says, this is a real joke. I heard it on the ashram main street, between the batik and the bag check. One sannyasin said to another sannyasin, what I can't stand about this ashram is, wherever you look, there are queues. The other said, what? Jews? This is your misunderstanding. Mr. Gold had been married for many years when he had to go to Paris for a business trip. In that city of love, he easily fell victim to the amorous advances of the pretty mademoiselle. But somehow, Mrs. Gold found out about it. She wired her husband at his hotel, come home. Why spend money there for what you can get here for free? The next day she received a cable in reply, I know you and your bargains. Just a misunderstanding on your part. An English vicar checked into a large hotel. As he was walking up the main stairway, he met a tiny old lady halfway up, panting for breath and carrying an enormous suitcase. He eagerly took the case from the speechless old lady and carried it to the top of the stairs. When he returned to help her up, she kicked him viciously in the shins. It took me 10 minutes to carry my case that far down, she shouted. A Bella, I'm homesick, Bella, but this is your home. Ella, I know, and I'm sick of it. The newly arrived ambassador to a far eastern country called on the emperor to present his credentials. Although he was disturbed by the presence of so many comely half-nude maidens in the palace, he was determined not to show it. Trying to restrict the conversation to affairs of state, he asked, "Your Highness, when was the last time you had an election?" "Ah," said the emperor, with a smile and a sly wink, "just before breakfast." The problem is not with poor Sigmund Freud. The problem is with you. What he can do if it does not satisfy you, it is not a question of satisfying you. The truth is truth. You say sometimes the perfume of a flower, sounds, a place or an incident from childhood can evoke a few seconds of feeling and yearning that are so sad and so sweet. It can choke me with its intensity. It is possible only if this moment is not intense enough to grip you totally. If something is left out of this moment, if you are holding back, then only. For 25 years I have never thought of my past, of my childhood. No nostalgia. And I have never thought about the future either. This moment is so much, in fact too much, so overwhelming. Who bothers about past and future? You say, my childhood was not so happy, nor is the womb so appealing, that mere sentimentality for the old days can explain it. Nobody's childhood has been happy. It cannot be happy for the simple reason because the child is so dependent, so helpless, and he is continuously manipulated by the parents, by the teachers. He is continuously repressed by everybody, ordered, commanded. No child can be ever happy. But everybody later on thinks that the childhood was the most beautiful thing that has happened to him. The reason is again relative. The childhood was miserable, but now you are in a far more misery. The childhood looks now beautiful, seeing all the worries of life and the responsibilities and the troubles and the anxieties. It looks beautiful, but that is only relatively. The older you will become, the more beautiful it will look. That's why it is both sad and sweet. The sadness is its truth, and the sweetness is your invention. And when the childhood was not happy, you say it was not happy. That simply shows you must be living a really miserable life today. If even an unhappy childhood attracts you, that shows only one thing and shows it definitely, that today is just dark, meaningless. Hence the past pulls you backwards. I can say only one thing to you. learn the art of meditation. Meditation simply means the art of being here now, totally, absolutely. And then all this nonsense about nostalgia will disappear. Otherwise, it is going to remain with you to the very end. From the cradle to the grave, people go on living somewhere else where they cannot live and go on escaping from the place which is the only possibility to live. The second question. Allow me to ask few more esoteric questions. Please don't laugh at them. It is a question of life and death to me. I know it is a question of life and death to you. To you not only, but to everybody else too. Because unless you know the art of screwing a light bulb rightly, you will never become enlightened. So I take your questions really seriously. The first question, how many Scotsmen does it take to screw in a light bulb? 10. 1 to screw in the bulb and 9 to share the expense. Second, how many Englishmen does it take to screw in a light bulb? 2. 1 to screw in the bulb and 1 to make the introductions. Third, how many Germans does it take to screw in a light bulb? 10. 1 to screw in the bulb and 9 to read the instructions. Fourth, how many Frenchmen does it take to screw in a light bulb? Almost 7. 1 to screw the bulb and 6 to screw anything else that happens to come by. Fifth, how many nuns does it take to screw in a light bulb? Almost 2. 1 to screw in the bulb and 1 to make sure that's the only thing she is screwing. Sixth, how many astronauts does it take to screw in a light bulb? Almost 2. 1 to screw in the bulb and 1 to give him a countdown. Seventh, how many Russians does it take to screw in a light bulb? Almost 50,000. 1 to screw it and 49,999 to occupy the country the house is in. Eighth, how many drunks does it take to screw in a light bulb? Almost 4. 1 to try to screw it in and 3 to keep the pink elephants away. 9th, how many Morarji Desais does it take to screw in a light bulb? Almost 1. But first he needs to be utterly drunk on his own heroin, ordinarily called urine, so that he can be convinced that he will save the India by doing so. 10th, how many people does it take to screw an Indian light bulb? Almost none. If it is Indian, it is most likely screwed up already. 11th, how many Gautam Buddhas does it take to screw in a light bulb? Almost none. Gautam the Buddha said to be a light unto yourself. 12th, how many niggers does it take to screw in a light bulb? Almost none. Black is beautiful. 13th. How many Bhagwans does it take to screw in a light bulb? Almost to none. He persuades the bulb to screw itself in. And the last question. Why are the Indians going absolutely mad against you? It is very simple. Meditate over this story and you will find the reason. An English vicar was driving along an unfamiliar country road late at night when a tire blew on his car. Having no jack with him or a spinner, he began to walk for help. In the distance he saw a light. Good, he thought, I will go and ask to telephone, or I can borrow the necessary tools. But as he walked along the road, he became uncertain. What kind of people could be up so late, he thought. Perhaps it is a couple having a marital row and I will disturb them. Imagine the embarrassment. Or maybe it is a young man and woman indulging in pleasures of the flesh. He imagined his awkwardness as a half-naked young man came to the door. Or he continued, worse still, it might be those dangerous Rajnis, oranges involved in a wild tantra argy. By the time he had reached the house, he was in a state of great excitement. He rang the bell and waited for a few minutes. When the little old lady came to answer, it was too late. Miserable sinners, he blurted out, keep your spinner and your telephone and go to the devil. That's what is happening in India. They themselves go on imagining things. And then they become so excited about them that they start shouting at me. And I have not done a single thing to anybody. I don't leave even my room. I just enjoy a few gossips every morning. Harmless gossips. But Indians are getting mad. They are working up themselves, warming up themselves by their own imagination, all kinds of imaginations. They are the cause of their own excitement. I have nothing to do with it. Enough for today.